Episode 312, Positive Classroom Culture.
Hey y'all, welcome to the Empowering Educators Podcast. I am Gretchen, your host and expert lesson learner. I'm a national board certified elementary teacher turned teacher, trainer, and coach. All the lessons I've learned and am learning on my edgy journey, I share with you right here. From every silly mistake to the most glorious successes, you're going to hear stories and strategies that will inspire you to become your best. I have to warn you, as an educator, I can't help but hold you accountable for doing the work. So every episode, I leave you with practical, tangible next steps so you can implement your learning and maximize your impact. Whether you're teaching a lesson or learning one yourself, there's always a lesson if you're willing to pay close attention. Elite educators, that's the secret to staying empowered. Bring on today's lesson.
Hi, elite educators. Gretchen here of Always a Lesson, host of the Empowering Educators Podcast. And whether you're teaching a lesson or learning one yourself, this podcast is for you. We are going to continue in the engagement series, and today's episode is centered around positive classroom culture. I hope you had a wonderful Valentine's Day, showering the ones you love with your time and attention. I am so happy that we are getting closer to spring. I am so over winter, as I'm sure you are as well, and the warmer temperatures and later sunset is just what the doctor ordered. I'm also getting very, very excited because my book releases in a month. I chat all things instruction and I share a very specific pathway you can follow to improve student learning and obviously your own proficiency as an instructor. So give one to yourself, gift one to a friend. I'll be doing a book study, so I will keep you posted on that. A link to the book will be in the show notes. Just visit alwaysalesson.com, click on podcast, find this episode, and it'll be right there for you. Well, we know that before we can even start tweaking instruction, we have to nail the environment, and we're going to hone in on that today. So if kids don't want to show up on time and learn along with us, it doesn't matter what cool new way we are presenting information to them. If we can make our culture strong and safe and encouraging, then engagement becomes so much easier to tackle. It's like lining up our dominoes in the order that will lead to the greatest results. So today, let's focus on the importance of creating a positive and inclusive classroom environment that fosters engagement. Have you ever heard of the Thrive framework? It's from the Ed Connective, and in fact, I'll put the link to that in the show notes. So we know that students that are in a thriving class community, they feel this sense of belonging. They feel like we're a family, and the way that the learning space is set up is really meaningful, and students are able to react to that in a positive way. And allowing all students to feel welcome makes them feel included and safe, and they want to engage because they feel connected. They feel like it's important that they're there. And that is what starts the whole process of how someone learns, is just that feeling when they come in. And the Ed Connective talks about, you know, stressed brains can't learn. So when we're able to help students' minds feel that safety and security, they are then open to the possibility of learning. So when we think about some roadblocks to engagement, it can actually tie all the way back to the environment we're asking students to learn in and what can be tweaked there to encourage them to open up and be willing to learn. And so the Ed Connective shares in this framework, there's 10 domains: relationships, norms, routines, attention getter, clear directions, positive presence, refocusing on learning, restoration after conflict, family engagement, and then inward reflection. So I want to take you through these and think about what this could look like for you, and then I'll share some next steps. Ready to go? Okay. So the first one is relationships. So all teachers need to build relationships with all students. And that begins with They feel safe, so then they start to trust, and then through consistent actions, the trust is earned and it's proven, and so that's when they put everything down and they're able to just be present and maybe be a little bit more open and transparent with how they're feeling or questions they have and are willing to take risks and learn. So the relationship piece is huge to helping all that's within the student come out, help them learn, help their peers learn, and allows everyone to get to know each other. So, I mean, it's like greeting students by using their name and giving them eye contact, not being too busy to stop and acknowledge them, accurately pronouncing their names. We have such a melting pot of culture here in the United States, and we need to acknowledge those unique differences because that's what makes someone special. And when you're not willing to learn the name or pronounce the name correctly, it's hurtful. You're basically saying it's not important enough. You're not important enough for me to get that right. And that sends a strong message of like, I don't belong here. And remember, belonging is that first stage of being willing to engage in the learning. Asking about kids' life outside of school, I mean, it just needs to be an ongoing thing, and it doesn't need to be these big over-the-top ways to build relationships. It's the little things, not just that one get-to-know-you activity you do, but spend time with them at recess or lunch. You know, show your human side. Forget that whole don't smile till June. Smile is what brings people in, makes them want to engage. Build in their information and word problems when you're designing those. Use kids' names, their favorite pets and colors and favorite numbers and favorite sports teams. That'll make them giggle. That, again, that you notice that you're paying attention to all the little things and they're so important. We talked about trust and when you're consistent and how you build relationships and you're fair and how you're building relationships. It goes a long way for kids to say, this is a safe place. I belong here. I want to be here and I want to learn. So number two are the norms. And we want those co-created with the students so they have a say. Class norms are, you know, posted and referenced, right? We don't just want to slap something on the wall and say, check, we did it. But throughout class discussions or activities, when you're noticing the norms are going a little outside the boundaries, you can physically show that reminder. Remember, this is our norm that we decided in order for everyone to be able to learn successfully, we have to follow these. So therefore, it needs to be in student-friendly language and just revisited often. And it's communicated frequently by you yourself as the leader in the classroom and students holding each other accountable. So spend time making them together. It doesn't mean you can't lead them towards some norms that would be helpful and make suggestions, but you want to give them a voice and you want them to do the critical thinking of why do we have these norms in place and what norms make the most sense if we were to prioritize the ones we came up with. All of that process is you're teaching them to think, and that will play out when you're teaching them a subject area. So it's time well spent. You want to help them connect what is the point of this norm to their own self and their development, to the world, like when they get a job and just being a citizen in the world, to their academic future. You know, all of that helps them see the value in something. And just keep it short and simple. I mean, we can't remember a laundry list of rules, right? So that's why that prioritization is really important. All right, routines. So a class routine, like how you enter, the first assignment you complete every morning, where to get materials, how you turn in an assignment, how are you supposed to participate? Are we raising hands? Are we calling out? What does partner work look like? Or what does small group work like? And then how do we exit the classroom at the end of the day? All that has to be well planned. And we know this, but it's also got to be communicated and it's got to be practiced and you've got to model it and you've got to hold students as models and you have to keep, just like the norms, bringing it back up. Remember, how do we do this and why do we have to do it this way? And let me tell you, you don't need anything fancy. Efficient transitions and routines. That's it. So just explain the why behind the what. Explicitly teach that one routine and hold students accountable for meeting your expectations, because if you start to let them slide, then it's another, oh, it'll rift into this procedure over here, and you'll start noticing it maybe when turning in homework, and it starts to ripple out in a negative way, and we certainly don't want that. And it's important that when you are teaching these routines that you teach them in the most important order possible. So I might not teach a how to select a book on the first day of school, but I definitely need to talk about how to enter and exit the classroom because that impacts them right now. And the other routine can wait. So ensure that you've thought through the sequence. So you're only teaching one routine at a time so that they can get it. All right, number four, attention getter. Teachers need attention getters while students are working. I think it's fun when you create the signal together, just like norms. And so ask the students, like, what would be a fun signal? Do you want to do the lights on and off? Do you want this remote doorbell? Do you prefer a clap or a chant or a bell, you know, and allow them to decide maybe it's for the week. This is going to be our attention signal. And that just gives them voice. They're practicing having a voice in that choice process. And again, this is a family. This is our community in here, and we make choices together. That investment is such a huge motivator for them to want to get to the academic stuff. Number five is clear directions. So you give concise, clear directions, and it has to be so specific, like the sound of the room and how long they should be doing something. What is the actual activity and what materials do they need? Because kids are just going to start asking questions or they're not going to go about the activity the way you intended. And so the more detail you can provide and what you're expecting, they're able to meet that, but they're also not distracting each other, trying to clarify what's happening. And this is the most common thing I worked with teachers on, and new to veteran teachers, all teachers, because we know what we want, but we don't always communicate it in detail to other people. And it is important that we keep it short and sweet because students will get confused with all that extra language. But there's a way to give all those details without it being a 5-minute rant of what we're expecting, right? So just give the essentials orally and then write them. So when providing, maybe if you have a technology that you can project, you can have a slide that has the directions. You're describing it orally, but then it's up there for students to reference. There's the timer. They know how long each section should take. They know what voice level everything should be at, and all the details are right there so no one is confused. Number six, positive presence. So a teacher needs to be kind and positive and encouraging, and not just the things they say, but the way they say it, their body language, praising students, acknowledging that they're making progress, you know, smile, like it's okay to be happy and enjoy your job. You don't have to be that strict teacher. You can be firm and have high expectations without being strict and not smiling. And no one's, that's just not approachable. It's not going to work for kids. Use eye contact or high fives or handshakes or whatever your way of communicating with your students is for a job well done. We don't want to wait to the end of the day. This should be throughout in all our interactions with kids. And the Ed Connective even mentions a ratio of 5 to 1, meaning that you have 5 positive remarks for 1 redirection because they tend to hone in on that one thing that they didn't do well. And in order to keep that in the reality as being a small, minute thing that they just need to work on, the value of the positives needs to be higher so that they start to see, okay, but I did have these other things that went really well, and it helps them kind of keep it in balance. They don't hyper-focus on what they did wrong. I remember I was coaching soccer at the middle school level, the girls' team, and I happened to have to get on the other side of the field where the parents were because for whatever reason, it turned into bunch ball over there and the kids couldn't get the soccer ball to the other side where I was, and I couldn't give them the directives that they needed. And so I just came over there. And so as I was helping them, like, heads up, you know, eyes out, look over your shoulder, turn around, try it again, you know, take a breath, slow it down, pull back with your foot. The parents were just kind of watching how I was coaching, and the students I was working with on the team totally were able to tune everything out, the pressure of having an opponent right there and the loud noise of the game and the, you know, forgetting about the time on the clock was running out, and they were able to just hear my voice and slow down and take that breath and do the moves. And it was choppy and it was slow, but you know what? They did it. And then I encouraged them, well done, try this again. Or they'd pass the ball and I'd go to the next person and help them think through it. And so although they weren't like these elite athletes, they were doing the fundamentals because I was helping them in an encouraging way, not yelling at them, and it allowed them to think in the moment. And the parents just started chirping. And I didn't hear it at the time because obviously I was like so focused on what was happening. And my husband, who's my boyfriend at the time, was watching the game. And he said, "Did you hear all those parents?" And I said, "No, what happened?" And he said, "They all said, I want her as my coach. I want her on the team because of the way that you were coaching." And we lost so bad. It was just awful. They were so much better than we were. But the parents cared more about how their children were treated on the other team than about their record. They much rather wanted someone who was encouraging and teaching those kind of fundamentals and just right there, supportive, just an arm's length away to help someone grow and to notice the progress, even though we were, you know, miles away from where they were in terms of talent, that I was still proud of the things they were doing well, as imperfect as they were. And so I'm not saying that to toot my horn. I'm trying to give an example of why culture matters so much and more important than any of the other outcomes, because it really sticks with people for the rest of their lives, of how they're treated and what learning should feel like and what kind of person can help them learn. And I hope that you realize that the consistency, it's not just that I gave you a compliment, it's that all day long I'm rooting for you, I'm supporting you, I'm noticing what you're doing, and I'm providing whatever you need in order to be successful. And that consistency allows students to know, okay, this person's really rooting for me. It's a positive presence. It's a consistent. I trust them. I'm going to learn from them. And I'm willing to put myself out there and do it imperfectly in front of so many people because it's a safe place to do so. Number 7, refocusing on learning. So there's going to be times where we're using trying to redirect students, like maybe we're going to circulate or we're trying some nonverbal signals to get their attention to, hello, get back on track, or just say something to the group without like saying the kid's name. You know, we all need eyes on our papers. but proximity works really well. You just keep teaching and move closer to that desk and the student starts like, whoa, teacher's right here, and helps them refocus. But again, we should co-create that, those strategies for on-task behavior. And it's helpful to know your students, to know what they prefer and what works for them. Some people prefer you to just tap on the desk instead of say, class, no talking. You know, it helps to know what their preference is. Some get really embarrassed. Some are so loud and obnoxious that they won't even hear you make an announcement to the whole class. So they need a touch on the shoulder and a quick wink of like, let's get back on track kind of thing. And you're really having to balance not distracting the people who are on task and disrupting the flow of your lesson. And so you really do have to decide, is this minor and I just need to use some of these strategies, or is this something that I need to stop and have a conversation? And usually when that happens, you get the kids rolling on a different assignment, something they can do independent, and then get down on their level and remind them of the norms and what you're expecting and why it's important, and kind of get them back on track. Elite educators, listen in real quick. Did you know that I offer micro PD on the go? It is true. Just download the Teachable app and browse Always a Lesson. There's over 20 topics to listen to or watch as you work out, drive to work, or whatever else is part of your daily routine. A little PD a day is going to add up, and before you know it, you've transformed into a new level of elite. Let's learn on the go together. Now back to the episode. Number 8, restoration after a conflict. So the teachers and students are going to help learn to be more productive when we disagree about something. And those of you who know kids, it's like it's all day long and they're not managing conflict very good. And it happens especially in the classroom. And so to keep kind of that flow and culture, you have to help them talk it out, share what they're experiencing, what feelings they're having, why that upset them, what they preferred to happen instead, allow the other person to talk, and on it goes. So this goes back to the norms of how we speak to each other, how we treat each other, discuss, you know, what did occur that didn't meet those expectations, and ensure that everyone can agree and move forward. Even if they disagree for maybe how it happened or why it went down, at least they understand something happened And that's not how we act in the classroom, not how we treat each other, and they can agree to move forward. And it's going to happen all the time. And you really have to handle this because of their emotions, handle it with care. But the more that students learn how to have the conversation, they will have it on their own without your facilitation because they realize it's really no big deal. And it's not scary to stand up for myself. And that's just how we do it here in the class. And the more that you hold students accountable for speaking to each other kindly and respectfully and extending grace when someone makes a mistake, the more they are willing to own up to mistakes, squash it, and move on. And so it's definitely something that takes repetition, again, for them to feel safe enough to express their emotion, to even acknowledge that they're having an emotion, and to stand up for themselves and explain what they wish happened differently, and to come to an agreement. And everyone just grows so much closer when you are that open with each other about what's happening. Number 9, family engagement. So seeking these relationships with parents, whether they are working multiple jobs or don't speak English and can't get in the classroom, or that they are volunteering all the time at the school, either way, we want families to know the great things that are happening and the progress of their own child. And so, yes, we know we've got to make those positive phone calls. I know emails are easier, but there's something about hearing the way someone says something, and to just hear them gush about your child is just, I want that so much more than an email. But you can also get information from a survey in order to understand, you know, a little bit more about your parents and their communication style and preferences. If you're able to make a home visit, to just, it helps put the pieces together of where the child is, maybe some of the obstacles they're facing, anything from home they might be carrying with them to school in a negative way, allows you some insight into that, and better understand the community and whatnot. So all of that's really helpful, but parents just want to know their kids are in good hands and get a general idea of, you know, maybe what's happening or being taught and how their child stacks up and all that. So it's helpful to let them know, here's the academic, here's the behavior expectations, and give the personal example, not just like your child's so kind, but like give the example of how they were kind. Or why are you proud that someone got a 70 on something when the norm in our brain is, you know, 70s are not meeting expectations, but maybe they came from a 40. I mean, you really have to explain why growth is really essential and giving them those specifics to hold on to. And it allows them, as their child grows and learns, like, okay, this happened before, or this helps my child, and it clues them into the learning side of their child that they don't always see. And then remember, we talked about that ratio 5-1 with the positive presence, and it applies here too. One of my daughter's teacher gave home a report card and she just gushed. It was a paragraph about how kind my daughter was and how, here, I'll read it to you. Okay, it says, Avery is such a kind friend in our classroom, consistently treating everyone with warmth and respect. Her compassionate nature creates a positive and inclusive environment for her peers. Beyond her admirable social skills, Avery's a diligent worker who approaches every task with a strong work ethic. Avery's combination of kindness and hard work makes her a wonderful student and a joy to have in class. I mean, come on! She did not have to put that much time and attention into a report card comment, but she took the time to give me specifics about what it is about my child that makes her a joy and how she contributes to this positive classroom culture. I'm just so proud of my daughter and thankful for this teacher to do this. I loved using Remind 101 as a tool to communicate with parents because it was one way they could not, you know, write back, but it was just a quick way to let them know, like, picture day's tomorrow, or don't forget field trip money, or today's spelling test, blah, blah, blah. You know, all of that just helpful reminders makes parents feel like they're in the know. They know what's happening. They can follow up at home. How did this go? What was this like? What was a favorite part of your day? It brings everyone together. And parents always said, thank you for letting me know what I can do at home to help. Even if it's just encourage, or it's a topic I need to bring up, or a conversation I need to have, or just change the way I'm responding to my child during homework time. Parents are so thankful to know that insight. And so when you set that culture in your classroom, that culture carries over into the relationship with the parents and is so helpful to help students learn. All right, last one is inward reflection. So engaging from the inside out on self-improvement and reflection. And it, you know, think about all those biases you have and privileges you have and maybe anything that you've internalized, and just try and allow yourself to be honest and acknowledge what's there and work through what's not. And so I like to make reflection part of my routine. At the end of a lesson when I'm teaching, or the days of lessons, I'm always thinking, you know, how did I make kids feel today? Are there any interactions that I would have maybe handled differently, and why? You know, what I want to try tomorrow? Anything that needs to be addressed? Am I treating all students fairly and appropriately? Am I showing examples of successful people that look just like them? Am I allowing my students the safe space to share their opinions or their values or their heritage? And when you start going through those questions, it just becomes your habit, the way you think. And so you don't need to always sit down and journal, and it doesn't need to take 20 minutes. But as you're collecting papers or cleaning up the classroom, you are kind of going through this reflective process and making a note for something you need to try differently tomorrow. And so the lesson in all of this, and I'm so, so thankful that the Ed Connective created this Thrive framework of 10 domains to really help us create a positive classroom culture that will lead to higher and deeper engagement in our students. The lesson here is that it doesn't matter what great quality content you as an educator have to present to students, and it definitely doesn't matter what cool strategies or activities that are in the lesson to bring the content alive, because if we have not cultivated a safe place that students want to be in and want to learn in and want to engage with us as teachers, then everything else we prepared is irrelevant. We cannot be effective at transferring knowledge to students if we haven't created a positive classroom culture for them to learn in. And there is this quote from Peter Drucker. You might have heard it before. Culture eats strategy for breakfast. You can have the best strategy, the best game plan, the best tools, but if the culture's not right, you can't even implement anything that you're coming to the situation with. And so it's important that we get this right before we start trying to change and improve other areas, or it will be wasted effort with limited results. So here are some tips. Obviously, I want you to go check out the website that's in the show notes for the Ed Connective, and you can see this Thrive framework and you can print it out and you can do your reflection with it. But I want you first, I'm going to give you four tips. Tip one is to just get clear on the reality of the situation. Ask your students about the classroom culture. Like, an anonymous survey is a great way to get the most honest answers. You could do questions like, do you like to learn in this classroom? Or how do you feel when you walk into this classroom? Are you nervous to speak up and share your opinion and why? And questions like that where students are like, I have not really thought about this before. But those answers will help you know where are you starting, because you might think things are great, and maybe they're not. Or maybe a percentage of students agree with you, it's great, and there's this pocket that's like, not everyone's having the same experience. Let me try and work on that fairness piece. Step two, based on those results, you're going to create your game plan. So culture just takes time to shift. It's not this overnight thing that you're like, whoop, culture's all back on track. There are no miracles. Only consistent baby steps over time is going to pay off. So consistency is the name of the game. And in fact, a great first step is thank students for their honesty, because it's going to help you know what changes to make, all because of them and all for them. They are part of the process. We talked a lot today about that co-creation and being a family and that we're doing this together. So use their feedback to design the classroom that they need. Tip number three, go ahead and revisit that same survey after a period of time, maybe every quarter, or maybe semester, whatever you feel makes the most sense. And this time, you're going to focus on the changes that you implemented and the impact it had on students. So how did you feel since we've made this change? Do you agree with your original answer of how it made you feel, or how much you want to participate? Ask them anything about how it used to be versus how it is now. And that will let you know if you're on the right track and know if you've got more room to grow or if you've righted the ship, which would be really exciting. And then tip four, just please repeat this process of feedback, daily intention and action and revision. And then just repeat that over and over until your culture is great, because one new student or a bad day or the weather or a different year or a different leadership, all of that shifts culture. And sometimes it's just not your fault. There's extraneous circumstances. And so it's something that you can't just say, I've done that. Culture's great. Let's move on to something else. It's you're always watching, always ready to make adjustments. Alrighty, lead educators, that's a wrap for this week's podcast on building a positive classroom culture so that student engagement is authentic and consistent and inclusive of all students. Now go out and be great, because you've just been empowered.